Welcome back to Owen and Brew's Barbecue. Today, we have something very special. All the way from Exegol, it is Wayfinder Pizza, served up by my other two co-chefs. Nick and Chris, welcome back to the show, Chris.
Thank you.
Good to have you back.
What's Wayfinder Pizza? I'm kind of curious.
It's all out of the way. You have to search for it.
Is it mostly just red sauce? That's all. Yeah,
it's kind of like one of those pizzas that you've been so hungry for the longest time, mm-hmm. and you order up this pizza and you have tons of stuff on it, like all the toppings, everything you could possibly think of, and you have that first slice and you have that second slice. And you're like, you know what? It's not as good as I thought it was going to be. Next time I'm going to order Chinese.
Okay.
I heard that they don't like that kind of stuff there over there much either.
Okay. All right. So today we are actually talking about The Rise of Skywalker. This is our official reactions podcast. If you are part of the patron's choice, and you get the bonus episodes, Jay and myself, we did a instant reactions. We both had seen the movie on a Friday and we're kind of excited. We wanted to just talk. So we jumped on real quick and did a podcast. So that's the patrons kind of bonus episode for Owen and Brew's Barbecue. If you're not a member of the Jay and Jack patrons, you can hop over to patreon.com/Jay and Jack. Become a patron member. We always thank those patrons at the end of the show that make this show extra possible. Without any further ado, none of us have actually even talked to each other since seeing the movie. These guys haven't listened to the bonus episode. They have no idea what I thought of it.
Nope.
We're going into it fresh, just like that pizza. So I think a lot of people have heard my take on it. They're dying to know from Chris and Nick what they both thought of it. So
Nick, I'll go first.
Okay.
And then we'll kind of compare notes. So I went and saw this movie the day it came out. Was it Thursday? I think it was. Like, I went and saw it on a Thursday. And I went like middle of the day. I think I went like at 11 o'clock in the morning to go see it. And the theater was packed. The excitement was there. The Star Wars, bam, pops up, and I got super, super excited. And then the scroll starts. I was like, God damn it. Like, the dead speak. I was like, oh my God, Fortnite is officially part of Star Wars canon. You guys know about that, right?
Yeah,
I'd heard about it, but I'm not on Fortnite, so I don't know.
So I'm not either, but I watched a Twitch stream of it because it popped up in my feed, and JJ Abrams like jumped into like they did this whole huge production where they literally cut into Fortnite when people were playing, and created this virtual like waiting room that a movie screen popped up, or like, and then all of a sudden, like a digital version of J.J. Abrams pops up and starts talking to the people in the game. And then they release this audio. And it's an audio broadcast, the one that's referred to in the movie of the Emperor. And that's the marquee. That's the rolling marquee.
What does the Emperor say on this?
Dead speaks. The final order is rising. Blah blah blah. This that and the other. All this bullshit.
I heard. Did you ever hear the tragedy of the Disney trilogy? That's what I heard.
Yeah,
I think you've been waiting to say that, and you just love beating that thing to death.
The tragedy of Disney trilogy. It's not a normal story that the Disney people would tell you, but it's a tragedy.
So, but it's interesting though. So they definitely crossed like the platform here. So like they literally a week, like 3 or 4 days before the movie came out, they opened up a virtual movie theater in Fortnite, in which people heard the Emperor's broadcast, which is referred to by the characters in the Rise of Skywalker. So, all right, you know, criticism aside here. So, my first viewing, I've seen the movie twice now. The first time I saw Rise of Skywalker, I sat back and I just kind of let it wash all over me. You know, I was like, oh, I'm enjoying this. This is like, I feel great being back in the Star Wars universe. There was a lot of points in the movie in which I smiled, like I had big grins. And I enjoyed it. Right. So my first time I enjoyed watching the movie. It was a pleasurable cinematic experience is the best way I can describe it. I went back and saw it yesterday, and I left before the end of the movie.
It is long,
really.
Like primarily because I had other stuff to do, and it's super long, and I knew how it ended, but. You know, like I got to the point in which the galaxy showed up and had the, you know, the rebellion's back. I got up and I bounced at that point just because I was just like, you know, I could go to the Home Depot and get this stuff taken care of. So I just had to get up and leave. And ultimately, I was thinking about it after my second viewing, and I was like, you know what? Yeah, it was a fun movie to watch, but man, in my personal opinion, it was a really unfortunate way to end the saga. And I didn't hate it. Mm-hmm. I'm not hating on it. Like I said before, I had fun watching it. Like I felt good about, you know, certain scenes. Some scenes made me laugh. Some scenes made me feel nostalgic. And that's a cool and all. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I felt underwhelmed by the result of the movie. That's the best way I can describe it. I feel like there's so much infighting at Disney between, you know, Rian Johnson's Last Jedi and JJ's Rise of Skywalker, which pretty much, they go as far as almost even saying it in the script, how things are being erased from Last Jedi. And here's the thing. Unlike Nick, I freaking loved The Last Jedi. I thought it was awesome. I know Nick is squirming in his seat over there. I enjoyed it. I actually thought that was a really good movie. But they definitely did not roll with the punches with Rian Johnson's film, and they went a complete different direction, and you could feel it. Like it was palpatinable, how you could feel how it was literally just trying to separate itself as far away from The Last Jedi as possible. So ultimately I give it, how many stars or how many lightsabers are we going to rank this on?
I don't, or grade, if you want to give it a letter.
We'll do out of five lightsabers. I'm going to give this one 2.5 lightsabers out of five.
Wow. 2.5.
Yeah.
That's seems pretty harsh.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't hate it, but it's the final Skywalker saga movie. Sure. And I didn't feel like it was.
Mm-hmm. Nick.
That's what I can say.
You've been in your corner waiting patiently with lots of, you have 6 pages of notes.
I have 6 pages.
Some would call them nitpicks.
Nitpicks. Yes. There are a lot of nitpicks. As I said, and when I called in, I liked it the most of the Disney trilogy.
I'm floored.
Yeah.
I'm shocked by that comment. We could just end Nick's comments right there.
The thing is, though.
So anyway, I want to thank the patrons that make this show possible.
No, go ahead, Nick. Yeah, it's because I hated The Force Awakens because it's beat for beat A New Hope, you know. And you can even say that with the second half of Rise of Skywalker, that it's beat for beat, you know, Return of the Jedi. I'm with Chris in some ways with The Last Jedi, and that when I saw it the first time, I went, did I like that? I think I did, you know, because it actually is entertaining. But this, on my second viewing, I didn't like it. because it just ignored so many established
rules. Rise of Skywalker, you mean? You mean you're talking about Rise of Skywalker?
Right. No, I'm talking about The Last Jedi.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Because you said that you liked The Last Jedi, and I'm trying to get to, I'm going to get to The Rise of Skywalker, but The Last Jedi, I mean, with what Rian Johnson did is that, you know, he ignored so many just established rules within Star Wars. You know, he threw a lot of pointless characters, a lot of pointless storylines, you know, a lot of things that were just kind of disrespectful. It's kind of, you know, and you can see that in The Rise of Skywalker, where there's multiple course corrections, multiple things of like, we're going to just ignore that happened, or we're going to rewrite that. And so, which leads me to The Rise of Skywalker, is that I'm with you, Chris. Like, the first 20 minutes, 30 minutes of that film, I was smiling. I mean, I was there going like, I actually kind of like this film so far. And then it gets to a point where I'm like, did they really put that in a Star Wars film? And then
okay, what exactly shifted you?
I'm going to get to that, but like, okay. So, okay.
I'm just curious as to where the shift kind of began.
So I like the first half of this film the most. The second half, basically after Han's cameo, I think it goes downhill. The first half of this film, especially the first 20 to 30 minutes of it, felt like Star Wars. I mean, in the fact that you have like this family of characters all integrating with each other, all communicating with each other, and you have such good little lighthearted humor within it, as well as being witty. Because, like, I mean, I love the fact that C-3PO had so many lines in this film, and that they were like C-3PO, like, no one asked, but I'm okay, you know, or like just so many good little things like that. And I like that, you know, even on the chase scene, you know, in the desert, which was an homage to Return of the Jedi, you know, like, you see BB-8 kind of going, you know, just beeping, saying, like, I can do this. And then Rey's like, no, don't do that. And then he does it anyway, the way a droid would. And then it helps the situation. That, to me, is Star Wars. It's like, you know, in that you have this playfulness and like, well, shut up, human. I'm going to do what I want. You know, like R2 would do or something like that. And so I enjoyed that. But once you get to the actual old ship where the dagger and the snake and all that stuff, it was almost video game plot bad, you know? And so I could forgive that in a way, because I was like, at least it's original. At least JJ's trying, you know, at least it's, you know, but then once he falls back on his usual laurels of just like, oh, I need to finish up an ending. I need to do this. Let's bring Palpatine, which he already did anyway, but like, let's do this. Let's just have this ending. And I'm like, oh, well, this is basically a combination of Return of the Jedi with the comic book that came out after the Thrawn trilogy. And so it's just like, Dark Empire. Yeah. You're combining Dark Empire with Return of the Jedi. And I was like, okay. So it's not, you know, I've seen this movie too, in a way. I was like, okay. And then, but I still enjoyed it in some ways. I mean, there's definitely some nice heartfelt moments, some good humor in it, but there's a lot of stupidity in it too. So, I mean, that's just how I felt. I mean, I'm glad that in the end that, you know, I mean, I can ignore this trilogy if I want to. I mean, because to me, it didn't build on anything. I mean, I hate to like give away like everything I'm saying, but you know,
I don't want to knock down anything you're saying. So I'm just kind of letting you go there. Because I mean, there's some things that I feel like you're completely wrong about, but go ahead.
Cool, and dude, Snaps let himself go. Dude.
What's that? Who's that?
Snaps let himself go, oh, man. Snaps,
yeah.
Greg Grunberg. Peloton, for crying out loud. Jesus.
So, Nick, did you have more to say to that? Because I'm not trying to not knock the legs out from your ladder here. But
no, it's fine. I mean, that's just kind of like my initial thing. We can continue on as we want.
Your second viewing, how was your second viewing compared to your first?
Okay, so yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, so my first viewing, I know Chris had and I had briefly, because you hadn't seen it at the time, because Chris and I both saw it on the Thursday, you saw it on the Friday. And that one is actually, you know, if you're going to get an initial reaction from me, that's the closest you're going to get, because that was me venting just your first viewing. You know, the second one, you know, I'd already seen it, so it was more like me watching my nephews and how they reacted to it. But yeah, I still felt the same. Like I was kind of like, okay, like there's the first bit I enjoyed, and then there's some that's just kind of eye rolling, corny. But I mean, I think my favorite scenes are, you know, between Rey and Kylo on the old Death Star. I thought those were great. And I mean, there's, you know, some other things, but I felt that it should have never been the Emperor, and you can tell that it's forced in there. There's a lot of plot holes and a lot of forced things that it should have never been Palpatine. Cause it, to me, it cheapens Anakin's story. It, you know, they don't even address it. They don't even really, other than Palpatine saying, you know, like, you know, your father was, I mean, Luke was saved by his father. No one's here to save you. Cause it just, to me, it diminishes Lucas's story, and they don't even address, you know, if Anakin was the chosen one or anything. It's just like, oh, it's just a retelling.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the chosen one thing stays within the original six. And I don't know if we necessarily have to bring in the whole chosen one story arc into, I always thought it was still Anakin, even with the fact that he turned to the dark side, you know, cause prophecies can be interpreted like how, you know, so I always kind of still felt like Anakin was the chosen one. He just brought about balance in a different way.
Because I have this later on in my notes about this. Like, this is the thing is, like, you know, there's different ways to interpret who the chosen one is and like what did it mean to bring balance, because that's never been explained ever. And right. You know, some people want to argue that Anakin brought balance because he actually wiped out the Jedi, you know, because like there were so many and there's only two Sith ever. But, you know, I never chose to see it that way. I always chose it. So it's like it's more about power. And that, like, at that time, there was so much darkness and so much of that kind of balance that, you know, but he did. He eliminated the Jedi, which made it tip even more to the dark. But then by eliminating the Emperor as well as himself, it brought it back to more of a center point, because all you have at that point now is Luke, and that's it. So he did bring balance to it. Mm-hmm. But this one, with the Emperor returning, that's what I'm saying. It's like, oh, well, if he never died, then did he ever really bring balance? And that's what I'm trying to say. It's like, if he's not gone, then what did he do? And, you know, and also the fact that it's called the Skywalker, you know, saga, but yet you don't bring Anakin in any way other than one voice cameo into any of these three films also kind of is disrespectful in a way. Because I was fully expecting to at least see a Force ghost of Anakin, and never got any advice, you know, any kind of helping towards Rey or Ben. It was just kind of like, okay. So that's what I mean.
Chris, I saw that you put your unmute on, so I figured you had something to
help. Oh, no, I was, there's rumors out there that there's a J.J. Abrams cut of this film. And I really, really, really want to see it, because I think that the way that they brought back the Emperor was just so easy and like a shortcut, you know. And like there's the scene when I think it's when Kylo is first going down to confront him. Mm-hmm. And you see that the holding tank with what looked like multiple Snokes.
Correct.
I couldn't tell if one of them was an Anakin or not.
No, but it was two Snokes.
Two Snokes, you know, and then like literally thousands of Sith.
Yeah.
Like, dude, what? I mean, and all of a sudden you've got this entire, I mean, I granted, if you've read some of the books, you might kind of draw your own conclusions that, like, you know, that the Final Order was, I believe, is a callback to the Aftermath series.
Oh, right.
Where you have, like, how they're taking all these kids in and kind of, what's his name? Who's the guy from the Aftermath series? The bad dude that gets killed. I forgot. But anyways, they're taking all these kids.
Oh, in, yeah, that's in, right. In way. Yeah, there was a bad guy that, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I forgot. I can't think of his name.
Rex something.
Rex. Or, yeah. Exactly. Or
Rax.
General Rax. Yeah. So there's this whole storyline of how they were kind of like corralling all these kids and having them be the future of the Empire, which one could assume that all of these people that just mysteriously showed up manning this entire fleet of Star Destroyers who've been subsequently been living underwater for 40 years without any contact to the outside world. You know, like, I get that's probably what they're alluding to. But I think that there's this, I feel like this movie could have been significantly cooler if they kind of cut out some of the storyline, right? And focused more on the resurrection of Palpatine and how the Final Order was created. Like, I think there's so much of a storyline that they've missed there. Like, what's this hall of Sith people chanting, right? You know, where did all these crew of all these ships come from? You know, it wasn't even a snap. It was literally a hand raise that just created this entire plot, right? Like, there's a moment where he literally, the Emperor raises his goddamn hand, and all of a sudden he's got a fleet larger than any world in the galaxy. Like, there is so much of a story behind there. There is so much of a story about, like, how the Final Order was created and where it came from, the origins, all that stuff, because it has been non-existent for literally, as far as the storyline goes, the last 40 years. Like, they created a 40-year storyline with the Emperor raising his hand. Right. And I'm just like, God damn it. They missed that. Like, they sure could have done some really cool stuff. But instead, we focused on, you know, Domhnall Gleeson. You know, screw that guy. Like,
well, he just had some throwaway lines. So,
no, but he had a throwaway yeah character. Like, sure, it was just stupid.
He hugs the slug thing at the end, so I figure that was some kind of weird, like, metaphor.
But it was just dumb. Like,
okay, so now that you guys have kind of talked about,
here's how you could have fixed this movie, is that you could have done this. You could have fixed this trilogy, in my opinion. You could have fixed this trilogy back at The Force Awakens by including Thrawn into the storyline, bringing a more sinister dark side, right? Like, Kylo Ren was not sinister. He was just an emo kid. But you could have brought Thrawn into the storyline. You could have brought the entire Outer Rim, the storyline from, like, Aftermath and the Thrawn series. You could have brought so much stuff in there because of his connection with Anakin. Because could have tied Anakin back into the story that way.
But so much of this, though, and we can maybe look at both directors writing and directing it, is that they completely ignored everything that was ever written or created. So nothing ties into, you know, whereas Marvel, it's like, okay, we have all this synergy with all of these things. And, you know, Marvel did it with their TV shows. They completely ignored things that happened in the TV shows and just kind of worked the TV shows around the movies. This one ignores anything that's happening in the TV shows. And I agree with you about Thrawn. Like, if General Pride was actually Thrawn's character and that was revealed at some point in this movie, yeah, I mean, you'd have a lot of fanboys just, like, freaking out, you know, old school and new school, because everybody wants to see Thrawn. As far as
there's that one scene where you're like, what? Well, what? Like, it was a scene when General Pride is sitting there on bended knee talking to the hologram, and he's like, "I will serve you just like I served you in the past." Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, right. What? Who are you?
Yeah,
right.
Like, okay, tell me more about this. Like, what's this about? Like, no, but there's nothing there. It was all just a script filler.
I will say this, and I know Nick still has, like, 1,000 more, you know, a million to one, like, Nick picks, whatever, you know.
My Nick picks.
But I will just at least express my, feelings on seeing the movie at this point, because if you haven't listened to the bonus episode, and some of you haven't, and, you know, my initial reactions are also mixed. So I think in that one I said that it was you know, not my favorite of Star Wars movies, but I did enjoy it. I don't feel like this trilogy is worse than the prequel trilogy by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
We had diners. We had love scenes that made no sense. We had all sorts of mishaps that happened in that prequel trilogy and characters that never once had an inch of an arc as to what I feel like Kylo did with going to Ben Solo. So I enjoyed his story arc throughout the three movies. So I even enjoy, like, looking back in this trilogy, I enjoy Luke Skywalker's story arc. And even though you can say, like, okay, this movie course corrects what happened in The Last Jedi with Luke Skywalker, I like the fact that Luke cuts himself off from the Force. I like the fact that the big showdown in Last Jedi is Luke Skywalker. And I like the fact that his character has grown to the point in The Rise of Skywalker where he is accepting the mantle and he has kind of taught Rey, like, don't be like me. Don't do what I did. And here, this is your legacy. You know, you have to turn and face. Basically, like Obi-Wan and Yoda said to Luke when he didn't want to face Darth Vader in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah,
I enjoyed that. Yeah, I know. And I don't mind it at this point. Whereas maybe some of the echoes of A New Hope didn't work as well for Force Awakens as they did with Nick. I'll grant it. There's a lot of echoing going on there. I also enjoyed Han Solo, you know, and seeing him. I think that was one of the moments of the movie that driving home affected me the most. I really enjoyed seeing that moment. I'm glad I wasn't spoiled on that moment. I liked seeing that whole change happen. And even the metaphysical thing that was happening with Leia projecting herself into or helping Kylo turn and become Ben Solo. There's something that happens between the two of them where they're connected. And I enjoyed that aspect. I think it's the closest thing that we get to, like, the three of them together is that moment. Because in that moment in the movie, you have Ben Solo confronting Han Solo. You have Rey turning and going to see Luke Skywalker on the island. And then you have Leia basically laying down and projecting herself into the situation. So I think that maybe that's at the heart of this movie, you know, this turning point. As with Nick, on my second viewing, I enjoyed it more as far as, like, all of the character beats in the first half of the movie. We get C-3PO more so in this, like, the actual C-3PO from the original trilogy than we have in, I would say, any of the movies since Return of the Jedi.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that part. I mean, I love that they respected C-3PO. Not to interrupt you, Matt, but I really liked that he seemed like C-3PO for the first time since Return of the Jedi. I mean,
right. And I'll grant it. I mean, there are flaws in this movie. I'm not here to, like, defend the Disney trilogy against the Knicks of the world. That is not my job. And
I did love the scene with C-3PO when like I forgot what the there was, like, a group of them walking somewhere and they, like, look back at C-3PO like yeah. Really? And, like, they look back, everyone turns around, looks at him, and he just goes.
Yeah.
For those at home, I did my very best C-3PO turnaround impression.
Anthony Daniels, look out, because if you could fit into that outfit,
I'll tell you. You know, they did a nice job with C-3PO. I love how they just all of a sudden they're using, like, back up your computer logic with R2-D2. It's like, what, you don't back up your memory to R2-D2? Like, what?
even the humor that carries out with C-3PO even later in the movie, and the fact that, like, he finds out, like, Babu Frick, like, he's one of my longest friends, you know.
That was funny.
Like,
it
works. All of the writing for that worked for me. I think as fans, and I just wanted to kind of mention this before we segue into more of Nick's nitpick, because I see he's got his list there. He's like, okay, let me go. I think we've entered into this phase of, like, hyper fandom where, you know, back in the day when the original trilogy came out, you didn't have, like, 1,000 podcasts or 100 like online bloggers like expressing like all of their views. You had people that just went, they talked with their friends at school, then, you know, some of their friends might have been like, this is bogus, or I liked this, you know, but we didn't have this kind of instant. And it's interesting that the people that I've talked to the most are the ones that are the ones that I have talked to that have, I would say, aren't hardcore Star Wars fans, are the ones that casually enjoy it the most. They're the ones that are like, I love her, I love Daisy Ridley, and I like what she's done with this character, or they just went to the movie theater because it's Star Wars and they love the experience of Star Wars and it worked for them. They're not the ones that are like, why wasn't there Thrawn? Thrawn would have made this better. And I agree. I am one of those people. I thought about it today as well. I was like, you know, if they would have had Thrawn instead of General Pride, like maybe that would have been a better like punch at the end there. And if J.J. Abrams says that he wanted to have the Emperor in this whole, like that was the big villain, why not give a clue and a New Hope that, I mean, even a throwaway line, like why not set the crumbs up knowing that Rian Johnson was going to take over and turn it his way. So, okay.
You go on so many different ways. You go on so many different ways. And I'm like, what was I thinking of like 2 minutes ago? I mean,
that was his wizardry to try to throw you off and criticize the movie. But and it was very well done. So like, at first you're like, is Matt on my side?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean,
what are you doing?
I enjoyed the movie and I enjoyed it the second time more so. The first time I was definitely underwhelmed, as Chris was saying, and that kind of like, oh, this wasn't everything I wanted, but
yeah,
the other three people in my family were ecstatic about it. So
but like, you know, I'm not sure if you're still here, Chris, or not, but one of Matt and I's last conversations before the movie was released was we were talking about how people get so upset with Star Wars now since the prequels and the sequels, because Star Wars, because it has so many elements of mythology, religion, something like that, that Star Wars is a religion to a lot of people. And so to me, you know, the original trilogy sets up, you know, the rules and things like that. And then so every edition is like another book of the Bible or the Quran or whatever you want to say. And it's, that's what I'm saying. It's like, so it's like you're adding on something to that. And it, if it doesn't quite fit in that square peg, you know, people are going to bitch about it. And I get that, you know, and I'm one of them, as everyone knows. But it's just because it's like, I'm respectful of rules. So it's like, oh, they say that you can only do it this way, so you need to only do it this way. And then all of a sudden someone goes, I like Rian Johnson. And goes, I'm just going to forget that. Forget everything you've ever known. Let's just do this. So, yeah, people are naturally going to get upset. And then.
But I don't know, man. Like, this trilogy, looking like, I was on board with it, you know, from the day one when the Force Awakens first opened. I loved it. But when you compare that to the first prequel trilogy, I remember seeing Phantom Menace and I remember leaving the theater being like, what the was that? Like, I remember being pissed. And there's the big difference for me. It's like I remember being ridiculously upset about that movie, and the subsequent, you know, next two movies were also equally terrible, or less terrible than Phantom Menace. But like, so when I compare the two prequel versus sequel trilogies, I still have a place in my heart for this Rise of the Skywalker saga trilogy, right? And I look back at these three movies as a whole, and there are so many people that are so mad about them, like, and they get like real mad, and like like real mad, like people like, I don't know, this guy right up here in my upper right hand corner of my screen, but as much criticism as I have for these last three movies, I still really, really, really enjoyed them. Like, I really did. It was being back in what felt like a real Star Wars story. Like the prequel trilogy didn't feel like that to me at all. These felt like Star Wars. But looking back at a whole and these last three movies, I really wish they had a different direction for the like the protagonist and the good guy, bad guy. Like I think that the Kylo Ren story, although was kind of cool from like a redemption story with being, you know, Solo and Leia's kid, it just felt like too much of two good guys trying to accomplish the same thing in a different way.
Yeah.
Like it didn't feel like you didn't have that character. You didn't have that Darth Vader. Like, dude, Darth Vader is one of the baddest mofos in the galaxy and everybody feared him. And when you were a kid, you feared Darth Vader because he was scary, bad, and he was like the epitome of all that is evil in Star Wars. I never felt like that with Kylo Ren, except for that one scene when he held the blaster bolts up and then shot them back.
Yeah.
Like that was badass. And I was like, if they just kept that feel with him throughout these three movies, it would have been crazy good. But they didn't. It turned into a love story in which they freaking kissed, dude. Like, God damn it.
Before we go any further, I just need for us to kiss our commercial break right here. And we're back. It was
why? Like, God damn it. But I'm going back to
my daughter was really disappointed by that.
Was she really?
Moment. Yeah, she was. I looked over at her in the movie theater, you know, we're watching it for the first time and they kiss and I like look over at her and she's sitting next to me and she's like, ugh. Like she stuck out her tongue and she just was like,
here's the thing.
No.
This movie specifically, you know, had so many ups and downs. Like they did some really cool stuff and then they just totally counteract it with some stupid stuff. Like that kiss was just stupid.
Everything gets a happy ending. There's multiple things like that where even C-3PO sacrificing his memories only to get him right back, which I didn't mind. But it's one of those things where it's like nothing was ever permanent.
So what the cool counter to the kissing scene though was they did a really cool job with how Rey defeated Palpatine. Mm-hmm. Right?
You mean like,
the
Raiders of the Last Ark.
Yeah, totally. Oh yeah, dude, it was totally the Raiders Last Ark. She's like, I'm old as Sith, blah, blah, blah. And then she comes up
and then says, I am Iron Man, and then like does the Mace Windu move? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mace Windu never had two lightsabers though.
It's true. He just had the one. Yeah.
He only needed one. Yeah. He only needed one. Yeah. But like
he's a bad mother.
But like, I
could
feel
only
like,
melt his face. I couldn't like completely Raiders of the Lost. Mm-hmm. You needed the two. You needed the.
If they kept the main bad guy for this trilogy as the Emperor from the get go, it would have been. Nick would have criticized it because it would have been a mirror copy of
it. It would have been. But it should have been. I've been saying this since The Force Awakens. It should have been Plagueis from day one.
Yes.
Because you have it set up right there in episode 3. Have you heard of the legacy of Darth Plagueis the Wise? And you could have done so much cool stuff with this too. Like, I mean, because you could have had, like I said, like I think Matt might have read like an early draft of my version of Force Awakens. And that's what I mean. Like you could have easily had Darth Plagueis like get the relic from, you know, the Emperor's chair, first scene out of the gate for Force Awakens, you know, because he's after something. You know, you don't really see much in the Force Awakens, but, you know, you see Luke with the Jedi Academy. You have Rey there, you know, as a Jedi, you know, apprentice. You have Ben there. And then you could have even had Thrawn in there. You know, like, because, like, the way that I'm thinking, like, the first movie should have been, I know this is all my fan fiction, but, I mean, and I don't want to segue too much into this, but, like, you could have had this, like, why am I forgetting her name right now? The female leader of the rebellion.
Princess Mon Leia?
Mon Mothma. Thank you, Chris. So Mon Mothma, you know, it was the new chancellor of the New Republic. She's just passed away. Leia's now running for, you know, the new chancellor. You know, you have like a divided Senate like we always have, you know, and then you have Luke training, you know, his Padawans, all this. And then somehow... in the night, you know, you can even have that little bit of lore that they showed there in The Force Awakens. You have Plagueis like tapping into Ben, you know, in his dreams, you know, planting these little seeds, like, you're never going to be as good as Rey. You know, you're never going to be all this, like, you could have gone so many different ways. And then, like, by the time you get to the second film, you can have, like, what you're saying, Chris, like, having, like, this bad villain being in Plagueis, showing Ben, like, how he can create life, how I can destroy life. Like, you know, yes. Just him completely creating something and then killing it right there. You know, like, just...
And the whole Thrawn, the Thrawn aspect, like, think of that. Think of his character. Like, think of what dynamic that would have fulfilled for these three movies, right? So you've got this dude who's like a supreme badass strategist, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody can out-strategize Thrawn. Nobody, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah. And but he does have this cloud over him amongst all of his the folks in the Empire, who thinks that he's out for his own good in his own volition, right? They think he's out there for his own race. Because he's frequently questioned, like, his loyalties are always frequently questioned by people surrounding the Emperor. And if you think about, like, how that could have played into this story, right? You think about the guy who's running, or who could potentially be in command of the Final Order, right, being Thrawn. And all of a sudden, finally, his loyalties are challenged between his race, the Emperor or Plagueis or whomever, and all these bad guys. He could have been like the equalizer dude, and it would have been sick. Like, Thrawn is an amazing character.
I think the one thing that Thrawn also represents, Chris, I mean, he's a dynamic character, is that he also represents the very first of what we got post Return of the Jedi. He's an heir to the Empire, and it brings in a lot of the old guard, you know, of us fans out there that know him. And even you could have still had him in Rebels, and exactly what happens to him at the end of Rebels, you're still kind of like wondering. Okay, well, I'm just saying that it could connect. But,
well, I mean, I've read stories of him post Rebels, so I guess it's not that big of a deal.
Right. I mean, it's kind of like, I mean, you know, you don't have to rewrite Heir to the Empire, and I think that that's one aspect that like I said, both directors. Who wrote on the movie could have looked at some of that fan stuff, but everybody wants to make their own new stuff.
And don't forget Thrawn's connection to Anakin.
Right.
Like,
sure.
Like, they were boys, dude. Like, they have a lot of
material there, and they completely ignored all of that. So, you know, if anybody wants to say, like, there's so much fan service, there's actually not a lot of fan service, because the fan service would go way, way into some of these other things that are not on screen. Like, I mean, the fact that they tease the fact that we would get the ghost at the end of this, and yet we don't see who's flying the ghost, or we don't see any of these other characters. You could at least, and I realize that, like, some of these other authors don't, maybe they still have plans for what's going to happen, but I don't care. Like, just show, you know, I would have felt a lot more dire if I had seen certain characters at the very end in that last showdown with the Empire, you know? So, and I mean, albeit there are some things that happened in this movie that didn't go the way that I wanted to. I still, watching it a second time, I still really enjoyed moments of it. It didn't leave me satisfied. And I think that that's one of the key things, is that as I left Force Awakens, I felt satisfied. I was like, even though I knew, like as Nick has pointed out, it's A New Hope retold. But I still, at the end of it, I was like, yes, I'm with those guys. Wherever they're going, I'm with you. At the end of The Last Jedi, it's a full meal, okay? It's weird because that movie, you should feel like completely destitute, like you do at the end of Empire Strikes Back. Like, there is no hope. But I actually feel a lot of hope at the end of The Last Jedi. It's weird because...
Oh, no, with the farm, the kids sweeping and all of a sudden... Yeah, like, dude, that I loved it. So where is that in this movie?
Right. I mean,
gone.
Okay.
Erased.
So
it didn't happen.
And I felt like, okay, so
at feelings.
At the end of this movie, the only thing that I felt was like, oh, okay, they've buried this. They've literally shown me that they're burying this. This is done. you know, with her in the sand with the two lightsabers. Like, they've actually, like, entombed and buried the story now. Like, it's, like, that's it. Like, we can, we've had our funeral, I guess.
Great transition, Matt. Let's talk about the lightsaber.
Okay.
Let's get to, hold on. Let's talk about the lightsabers first, and then get to, I know what you want to talk about, Chris.
Which
is why the color of the lightsaber.
Oh yeah,
I know that's what you want to talk about. But okay, so like first, like little things like that made no sense to me. Like one of the minor nitpicks is that we see in The Last Jedi that Kylo and Rey destroy Anakin's saber. So she magically put it back together at some point and is still using it, Go ahead.
So we see her using the healing force in this. So that's how she healed it. She healed
She healed a metal object with the force.
Well, you see that it's banded together now. Yeah. So.
Well, I mean, it's just one of those things that really kind of bothered me because it's like, why doesn't she have Luke's? That's the one thing that really irks me about this trilogy. Is like, where is Luke's green lightsaber? I know it's small and minute, but who cares? Like, it's just one of those things. Like, you saw him in the flashback using it while training Leia. If he has Leia's lightsaber on the planet, where is his? It has to be there too. Because if you can't just say like, oh, well, he threw it away because he didn't plan on fighting anymore. Because it's like, well, obviously he knew then from Leia's flashback that he was going to have to need this at some point. Because if Leia's telling him, oh, my lightsaber's done, it's just one of those weird things. So why didn't he give her the green saber at some point? And then that one's not buried, so it's still there somewhere. It's just little things like that just irked me a little bit. And then, of course, you have the whole Maz, I never say her name, Maz Kantina, you know, in Force Awakens.
Butthole eyes.
Saying, like, you know, you never got that answer. Thanks, JJ, for that mystery box of, like, how did you get Anakin's saber? We're never going to find it out, even though she says that's a story for another time. Never got it. I don't know. Sorry, that's
too busy farting on her eyeballs.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but I'm sitting there watching this movie. Like, all I can think of is that her eyes look like buttholes.
I don't know. I guess that's just because, like, I think Luke's green saber is cool, and you know the fact that she kept even said to Leia, like, "I will earn your brother's saber." I'm like, well, it's really Anakin's saber, but okay.
Oh my god, you cannot get over the prequel.
How about Dominic Monaghan's completely pointless cameo?
Yeah, exactly. And that's another, it's a way to me, like, it's one of the things where you're talking about, like, completely crapping on The Last Jedi is that, you know, they basically shoved Rose in the back seat. Like, we're ignoring you for now. And, like, you know, JJ's known for doing that, putting in his friends in these movies. And it's like, well, shouldn't those lines have gone to Rose, really? I mean, because it wouldn't have mattered, like, it's the same importance. It's like, but they did. They just kind of shoved her in the back. And it's like, exactly. Dominic Monaghan's character was basically pointless. It's a good one. I like it. All right, continue.
Okay, so the yellow lightsaber.
Yes. Chris. That's the crystal used by the Jedi Sentinel.
And guards of the temples too.
So, I'm wondering if is this the last we'll see of Rey?
I think the actress has said that she didn't plan on coming back.
She's done.
So did Harrison Ford.
That's true. That is absolutely true.
Yeah.
So
when they need that big check, come back in. Yeah.
Like, just give her about 30 years.
But here's the thing then, like, okay. What the why would you give her the, like, why, if she's not going to come back, if you're not going to have like she's essentially a symbol of, like, the baddest ass Jedi to have these gold lightsabers, these yellow lightsabers, so we're done with her, and here you go, she's a badass, and you're never going to see her again, but here's the yellow crystal.
Other question. So, Kathleen Kennedy has said that maybe we're not done with the Skywalker saga.
There's no more Skywalkers left. Okay,
they're done. But they're done with trilogies. So does that? Can we read between the lines and say like maybe she's not satisfied with Episode 9? There's going to be an Episode 10.
Well, that's the thing to me, because like to me, Episode 9 felt like two films. I'm sure it did to you guys too. And that's where you can see the course correction from Last Jedi. It was two movies squeezed into one, which is why it feels so long. At least that's how I felt. I felt it was one movie all the way up until Han's cameo, and then another film after that. I mean, granted, the second half was a bit short. It couldn't have been a complete film, but it was. It was kind of like, here's one arc, and here's another arc.
Hey, you just reminded me. Good job. One of my compliments would be the Death Star, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I thought the set design for that was pretty rad. I think having her walk into the Emperor's, you know, chamber.
Vault, yeah.
Then the vault was pretty cool. Like, that was
a very cool way of, like, it was a cool way of having a dark side cave, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, like, I was a fan of that. Him.
Yeah.
But that's so. What I mean by, like, feeling like two films in that, you know, you already had one dark side thing with Rey with the mirrors, which I guess mattered to nothing, from Last Jedi. And then this one, she has another dark vision. So it's like, oh. So they're kind of like saying, well, that first one, not that it didn't mean anything, but you're kind of doing the same thing again to kind of be like, oh, like we're showing the threat of she could go dark, which actually I kind of rooted for her to go dark. Did you guys like, cause like in that moment you see,
oh,
like,
yes.
And then like, even when Kylo Ren shows up with Holocron, whatever, the navigation,
it's a
wave finder. When you see it, like, you know, she's like going, give it to me. Give it, like, it's like greed. Like she's just kind of like has this weird look on her face. Like, crap, she's gonna go dark, you know, and then of course she doesn't, but
it'd be awesome if she did.
Yeah, I like.
I don't know where to go from here. What else you got there, Nick, on your list?
I got so much stuff, it's just crazy. So, did you guys, let's just go back to the beginning because this is where my notes start. Did you guys realize the first thing we see is Mustafar?
Yes, yeah. He's running the woods, like thrashing people.
Yeah, he's just running and killing. Yep. You know, the random people that are there. And
those are the. I was reading something about that. So those are the. I think the Sith acolytes.
They're Alzamek species. I'm not sure. You know. But yeah, and they have these iron trees that are apparently grown up. But I felt that was kind of a missed opportunity. They didn't show, you know, Vader's
castle.
I was like, well, they just show where the Sith Wayfinder is, but it's like, well, you kind of show it in Rogue One. It would have been a nice call out to show it again, you know?
Yeah, no, it would have been cool. I liked that we jumped into the action, that it wasted no time. So
that's true. Yeah, I mean, I like that. Yeah.
Unlike me not hearing or being a part of Fortnite, I was just like, oh, okay, like, wow, we're going right to this. Like, we're not wasting any time. And for me, like, a lot of the film felt like we were on this frenetic breakneck speed, you know, and that's where, to me, like, part of it did feel rushed at moments, and maybe the second half more so than the first half. Like, the first half had like that, as you pointed out, like, it had a certain like pace where I could breathe, I could laugh with the characters, and I could be along for the ride. Whereas maybe the last half, you know, or last quarter, we'll say, like, felt a little bit rushed,
right?
So yes, Mustafar.
It's just a nice little tidbit. I felt, I was like, oh, like, I mean, after I realized it was Mustafar, I would have enjoyed seeing a little bit of Vader's, you know, palace, or
and we never got like a confirmation as to where the rebels are hiding out. Like, they're not on Yavin, like, as we suspected, but they're on some other jungle planet, apparently. So,
oh, okay. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, we've never gotten a confirmation of, like, oh, yeah, they were on Yavin, or, oh, yes, they were on, you know, so wherever this forest planet is that they're hidden. So,
just going, because I'm going in order kind of in a way. So, going back to what Chris was saying about, like, you know, it was something that didn't need to be addressed, but kind of it did, I felt like. They just left it open, like, with how Palpatine came back, which in a way kind of frustrated me, because it's like, is he a clone? Because he was kind of clearly making Snoke. But if he's a clone, how does he have his memories? And, you know, because like, clones wouldn't have a memory. His memories, it would just be, you know, a blank canvas, but his body and powers. And if he's not a clone, then how the hell did he get off the Death Star? Because clearly he went down his long shaft, he exploded, mm-hmm. then the Death Star exploded. So it's mm-hmm. like there's not much left. And it's not like he could resurrect himself. I mean, even Rey and Ben couldn't do that. So it's like that's one of those questions to me that just felt like, well, how is he here? You know, and that's...
Do you want my kid's explanation?
Yes, please tell me.
So... And he came up with this before even seeing Rise of Skywalker. So this was his, like, because we were all kind of speculating how the Emperor come back. He thinks that as the Emperor died and the Death Star was exploded, somehow he pulled in all of this metal shrapnel all around him to protect himself.
Okay.
As Leia did in Last Jedi, he's floating in space. He, like, pulls all of this, like, metal scrap around him.
It's clever. Thank you.
Yeah, and kind of similar to how Darth Maul apparently survives, because we've never, you kind of figure out that Darth Maul in the Clone Wars comes back from some similar. I realize we don't see this, okay? I'm just saying that this is how my 9-year-old
makes way more sense than the movie did. I think your son's on to something.
Yeah, I like it. It's clever thinking.
I'll tell him to write it in a comic book.
Absolutely.
That's the only time that we're going to get an explanation for this.
So my second viewing, because this is where I'm really analyzing it, was my second viewing.
What did your nephews think of you at this point? Were they just like?
I mean, they're 8 and 10, you know, and so they're looking at me like, "Why are you writing in that notebook so furiously over there?" But the second one was because now that you know from this scene in the beginning that Palpatine was Snoke all along. And like Chris said, you know, he's got a whole freaking fleet buried with planet-busting weapons. What's the point of having Starkiller Base if you can just send multiple Death Stars and rule it that way? That's how I knew immediately that this was a hodgepodge thing, that the Emperor was never supposed to be included from the beginning. It's just like, because it makes no sense.
Are you telling me that J.J. Abrams would lie to us?
You know he did. Yeah.
All right.
Anyway,
okay. What else you got?
I've got tons.
You only got three more minutes left.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crammed on there. Well, I mean, and then like the last thing I had is, he goes, you know, Lucas had told McDermott, the Emperor, that you know that he was dead. His character's dead. So that's another thing of like where Kathleen Kennedy had promised Lucas that she would never interfere with his 6 films. Like, you know, like everything he has canon is. And then so that to me felt a little bit disrespectful to bring him back in this way. Cause I was like, and that's why I'm saying it should just have been Plagueis. It had been much easier to explain.
Is that why we get a chimpanzee that looks like a Yoda?
I was gonna bring that up too. Like, what the heck is up with this weird Sith chimpanzee thing? Like,
God. Okay, so
Yoda, I think I missed that.
He's the chimpanzee mechanic that makes Kylo Ren's helmet.
Fixes
his helmet. So. Yeah. I just wanted to point out that Lucas's initial idea, or one of his proposed ideas, was to make Yoda a monkey in Empire Strikes Back. So I was wondering if it was an homage to the fact that there was going to be a monkey Yoda.
Of all the things to have homage to, why the would you use this one? Like, come on. I mean, the sad thing is you're probably right.
Yeah, I guarantee he's right, because I kept thinking about that. Like, of all the creative aliens and things we've seen, you have a chip in a helmet. I was like, what is that? You know, I was like, okay, it's only a quick scene, so it didn't matter. But you're just going, it felt odd.
Yeah, you know?
there were moments that I wonder if JJ was just like, I wonder if we could throw in this slug creature. I mean, you know, Star Wars fans.
Yeah. Well, that was weird too. Like, when you see that in the next scene with the on the Falcon, that was the one alien in the entire movie that I was like, did they borrow this guy from Men in Black? Because it just feels weird. Like, it doesn't look like a Star Wars alien. It looked like, oh, here's something left over from Men in Black. Or
I wish they would have just thrown a Bith in there. Or, you know what I mean? Like, a Bith.
Yeah.
You know, like give me something that I can wrap my mind around.
Yeah. But now we have a big slug thing, yeah.
And why? Okay, you have... Now you got me going. Okay.
Uh-oh.
Come to the dark side.
We've turned him.
We have cookies.
No, because I still accept this for being what it is. Like, it's fine. Like, I'm just like, you know, I enjoyed the movie for what it is, okay? And I'm not going to say that the prequels are better than this Disney trilogy, because I'm sorry. The prequels, there's some bad stuff there. Anyway, they threw Wedge in for just like
they wedged him in. They literally wedged him into this movie.
They could have had Wedge on the Falcon as opposed to Dominic Monaghan the entire time. I don't care if Wedge is hugging the slug, dude. Like, just give me more Wedge.
I never was more proud of my nephew, though, in that moment, in that quick Wedge scene. My dad looked at me and goes, "Is that some random character?" I was like, "No, it's fucking Wedge. Sorry, it's Wedge." You know. And my nephew, though, before I even had said that, he goes, "Wedge," and I was like, "Oh my god!" The fact that a 10-year-old can recognize an old man who he has not seen since he was, you know, I was like, "That is awesome." You know, so I was really proud of him.
And I know, one of our listeners, Greg, who's been an avid Owen and Bruce. I know he was disappointed in this movie. I know he's also one that asked us at some point just on the Facebook group whether or not we had listened to Resistance. What is it called? Star Wars Resistance? Rise of the Resistance? Maybe that's what it's called. It was a book. It was a tie-in book. I'm going to pull it up on my phone. Sorry,
Greg. While you're doing that, you just think of a really cool potential scene that could have happened in that moment, too. Like, when the whole galaxy shows up.
Yeah.
If they did this trilogy right and Thrawn was a part of it, whoa. What if Thrawn rolls up in his ship and just, like, going head-to-head? That would have been awesome.
Well, that was something... Yeah. That was something that I did not pick up on in the first viewing into the second one about the, because I, from the logical point, when you see the Emperor rise up this whole entire fleet, I assumed that these were just Star Destroyers that he had built while he was Emperor, and they'd been frozen or like kept a secret this entire time. So they're just empty vessels, you know? And I was like, that makes sense. Sure. And why else would he need Kylo and the First Order other than say, let's join up and your order is going to team my ships, you know, and we'll reconquer the galaxy.
That's what I thought.
Exactly. But on my first viewing, I thought that's what makes sense. That makes total sense. The second viewing, though, to see that the fact that there are Sith like lieutenants and generals and, you know, Sith troopers
with Star Trek uniforms, no less.
Yeah. I'm like, wait a minute. These guys have just been chilling in the ground for 30 years. It's like, did they get hungry? Like, I mean, it was that to me.
They had to order pizza with their Wayfinder. It brings it back to what I mentioned earlier. Greg had asked us at some point if we were listening to the book Resistance Reborn or had we read it. And I've been listening to that audiobook with my kids. I have not been impressed by the book. I haven't enjoyed it as much. And it's frustrating to know that this is a lead up to the movie and Wedge is in this book. I mean, they go out to like recruit him and yet he's sidelined in this movie. And I just kind of emphasize like the synergy with all of these other things that they have, the comic books, the books, the actual books that have been out there. Why not draw in? I understand that they're going to lose certain fans like the JPs of the world that, you know, never dig any deeper. No offense, JP, but I know you're listening. And that's fine. If they don't want to dig any deeper, you know, you just have them there and you know, like, oh, hey, like when I do finally watch something or dive a little deeper beyond the movies, you'll learn about them, you know. But for the rest of us, I think it would have been a great moment to actually like have these things like lead up. You don't have to explain where Wedge came from. Just throw him in there, you know, better than Dominic Monaghan or Slug Dude.
True.
Yeah. So, you know, I liked the action set pieces throughout this movie, including, you know, the whole fact that we lose Kylo Ren down the shaft or whatever, and he rises back up. You know, I guess that was the Rise of Skywalker. But yeah, I also like,
where's the actual rise, you know, other than him getting out of the pit? Okay.
I loved the whole transference of the lightsaber moment, you know, and But again, you have these characters that, you know, the Knights of Ren, they are, I mean, more so than Captain Phasma. Captain Phasma actually could talk. Yeah, I mean, these the squad that he rolls around with, apparently their spaceship actually smokes, which made me think of, like, you know, those trucks that like to roll coal. I guess the Knights of Ren like to also roll coal in the universe.
This is one of those things, like, if you would have started, like I said, like, and actually in the first film, The Force Awakens would have took place, you know, with Luke actually training Ben and Rey and, like, having this ball be, what if the Knights of Ren were simply other fallen apprentices of
Luke? That they are. You know? Yeah, I still assume they are.
You don't see them with any lightsaber. You don't see them use any force abilities. So it's like, well, what's the point, you know? And then all they do basically is capture Chewie, and then they try to beat up Ben. That's it. It's like, yeah, they're not there. It's like, well, okay. What was your whole point in the film?
No, I mean, agree. Missed opportunity with the Knights of Ren. I felt like they should have had lightsabers.
Yeah.
How much cooler would it have been for Ben Solo to actually have to defeat all of them. I love his little move too, when he's just like, all right, like, let's go. Like, I love his, like, little
kind of
motion, you know? And that's the thing, is that I've enjoyed these characters more so. Again, I'm not trying to make this a trilogy war here, but I've enjoyed the characters a lot more than other trilogies. We won't name names, but it's not the original. But I enjoyed these characters for what they were, you know, like, and where those people went, I guess. Do I want more? Yes. Do I feel a little, like, shortchanged? Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, there's things about this movie in particular that I really, really liked, and I'll get into that later, but, like, I mean,
how much later? What is it? I mean,
dude, I think we're going to we're going to go for, like, another hour. I'm telling you, I've got a lot to say.
No, this is like Rise of Skywalker.
You guys keep interrupting me, and I've got stuff to say.
We got to wrap this up.
No.
We can't hear you. We can't hear you, Chris.
Chris, you're muted.
There you go. So have you guys read or listened to the Aftermath series?
No. Matt's read them.
I've read them.
Half of the first book and then kind of got bored with it.
No, I've read the entire,
So going back to my whole I wish stuff. The Aftermath trilogy does a really cool job with, so Chuck Wendig, who's the author of the Aftermath trilogy. If you haven't followed him on Twitter, you should, because he's pretty funny. But the cool thing about Aftermath, so that it was written, when was it written? I think it was written after. It takes place immediately following Jedi. I believe it was written around the time that Force Awakens came out. Okay.
Yeah.
So it was almost as if Chuck Wendig had a little bit of, like, sense of where to go, right, with how he's going to build his story from the past. But the series ends on Jakku. And it kind of lends credence as to why they're on Jakku, right? But the whole idea of the creation of this fleet, Nick, this is, I came across this thought because of what you just said, but the whole idea of the creation of this fleet, they touch on some of that, right, in this book, and they touch on the relics and, trying to complete the Emperor's final plan. It's almost as if they took from this story, the Aftermath story of what essentially one of the plot lines of the things that was happening in the background. And they just put it on hold, or they let the storyline kind of continue, you know, in the background. And then all of a sudden they picked it up in the last half of this movie.
I can see what you're talking about.
So, like,
especially book three. Especially what happens in book
Empire's
three.
End. Yeah, in Empire's End. Totally. Like,
had they actually just stolen from it?
It would have been better.
It would have been better.
It would have been so much better.
I know exactly what Chris is talking about. Yes.
For those of you who want a more satisfying end to the Empire, do yourself a favor and either read and or listen to the Aftermath trilogy. I believe that there might be a new one coming out. I think Chuck Wendig's got a new book coming out. I'm not sure. But
and I enjoyed the second book in that it focuses a lot more on Han Solo and kind of what he's doing post Jedi.
Yeah.
So
if you're wanting
a little bit more, I mean the second book I enjoyed probably even more than the first and the third, even though I like where the third one takes you. So yeah. and to what Chris is talking about as far as the culmination of the Empire and this, I did like the juxtaposition of the First Order versus the Final Order and that whole thing. But red stormtroopers are just as vulnerable as white stormtroopers, apparently.
Yeah, that's just called toys for kids marketing.
I know, right? But like, if you're gonna call something a Sith trooper, come on, I wanted them to actually be like.
Chris touched on it very briefly, but that whole planet thing made no sense to me. And just because coming from the EU standpoint of like the Sith were originally a race that died out, for everyone out there who does not know. And then basically from that point on, you know, the Sith, they adopted that name because that's who was. And then, you know, you have the rule of two after that. And so the fact that you have a planet of these people, which you never really figure out who they are they just the planet's native people who just worship the Sith ruler or what? Like, you don't understand what that is.
That chimpanzee is all that's left.
That's all. Awesome.
I'll tell you, Nick, in Empire's End, Aftermath Empire's End, there's this kind of, I was alluding to this earlier when I was saying before that in these stories, there is this whole storyline about how Gallius Rax is his name. He's one of the main baddies from this storyline. Of how he was doing the bidding of the Emperor by recruiting like thousands and thousands of kids.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it makes sense. Like, that was the plan. Right. So you look at, you know, how are all these ships? How is this entire community of, of the Final Order? Where did they come from? And it's right here. Like, this story, Chuck Wendig's story, is so much better than J.J. Abrams' story. Like, I'm sorry. It really is. And had they gone this route, there's a lot of
stories that are written in the books that like no one will ever take from because they need to write their own thing and they need to create their own thing. And it's frustrating as a Star Wars fan because we have been given a lot of great stories over the years and a lot of them are either ignored and they're not even like treasure trove dove for, you know what I mean? Like,
no.
Like they don't take the great parts of it as opposed to like, let's say Marvel. Okay. Which has thousands of stories to pull from. And they actually like pull out some of the best nuggets. Star Wars hasn't done that with their legacy, canon, and they should, dude.
Like
their legend.
I think of all of the Star Wars books. I haven't read them. I listen to them in my commute, right? So I'm not trying to, you know, give off, you know, false valor for being a, you know, literate. I'm not. But I listen to these books, and actually, I find them even better to listen to because the narrators are phenomenal.
Oh yeah, and Mark Thompson's really great. He does a great Han Solo.
But I'll tell you that, like, he does do a great Han Solo.
Yeah.
But like, what's really cool about all the books I've read recently, so the Empire's, Aftermath, the Thrawn series, the Tarkin series, like all of these books give you the perspective of the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a big common thread amongst most of the books I've read, and they do such a good job of kind of like weaving in and out the inner turmoil of the Empire. Like, what we got from this trilogy is we got a comical turncoat, right? With Dom Hall Gleason. Now, Dom Hall Gleason, his character was so stupid, but you find out where he comes from in these books.
Yes, that's true.
And it's interesting, you know, thinking back to the books and seeing where Dom Hall Gleason's character came from.
It should be way cooler. It should be way cooler. But the idea of the of these other alternate stories, they do such a good job of like sowing some discord within the emperor and the empire, rather, right? But they show the massive power and strength of the empire, but they also show the infighting, the politics behind a lot of the moves that are made in the empire. You know, most people don't understand or get the differences between admirables and admirals and moffs and grand moffs and all the politics mm-hmm. behind all that. Like all of those stories in these books are so badass. And they could have been so they could have stolen so much content that would have created great, great storylines for these movies. And they failed.
I would like to mention Nick's. He talked about Dark Empire series. And one of the coolest visuals I remember when reading that comic series back in the 90s was the idea that when the Emperor came back, he had these clone tanks of his own body, which actually makes more sense than him cloning and creating a Snoke. But albeit, I accept it for what it is. It is Star Wars now. But in the comic, Dark Empire, the idea that he could jump into these bodies, and so as Luke's fighting him, he thinks that he kills one of them, but boom, all of a sudden his body's like coming out of another clone tank, and he's got to face another one, and you have all of these clone tanks. So that the fact that he could project himself into these, you know, I mean, that to me, if you're going to introduce the idea that the Emperor's coming back, why not have his spirit go into one of these forms? It makes more sense than the machinery. Although the machinery aspect reminds me of Darth Maul and Darth Vader, and the fact that the Sith are obsessed with the material aspect of things. You know, they're like constantly needing these like machines to keep them alive, as opposed to the Jedi, which can project and heal and, you know, kind of resurrect, you know. So you see, you get a little bit of that Jedi Force power, I think, with Leia. And I think it is one of the tragedies of this entire trilogy that Carrie Fisher, had we had her for this, how this story would have been so much different.
I did like what they did with her, though. I mean, even though it was all not reused, but like it was unused footage.
Right.
But I thought they did very good with what they had with her. That was actually one of the things I was, you know, really surprised about, because I expected like one quick scene of like her saying goodbye or hugging somebody, and that would be it. You know, but I was like, wow, like there's actually a lot of Carrie Fisher in here. You know, I was like, this is pretty good. I'll just skip to it. There was one thing I wanted to talk about with her, though, I thought was really interesting. It's one of those things that you can debate forever. Like, and it's her death. Where is it? But basically, oh, here it is. Okay, so you see that in the battle, and this is one of the reasons why it's one of my favorite scenes. You know, you see, you know, Rey tinkering on the knife's edge of like, is she going to go bad? Is she not going to go bad while she's fighting Kylo? And, you know, and you have this great, you know, first fight, you know, and then you have, of course, you have Finn butting his nose into everything. And then her turn around saying no and force pushing him back. And then they leap over. And then you see Ben having the upper hand, and he might actually kill Rey. Mm-hmm. And then you see her, Leia, you know, just commune to him and just simply say Ben. And in this situation, you wonder, is it like Luke in that she's projecting herself into him or there? And what really got me questioning this is because in that moment, it stops Kylo from killing Rey, and then Rey stabs him.
Yeah.
And so is, in a way, did Rey kill Leia, or was it just the fact that she's projecting herself into another planet, you know, like, or another area the same way Luke, you know, because they've said that in The Last Jedi that this would take so much energy to do this that it probably would kill you. But it's one of those things that's like, well, was she okay until Rey stabbed him? I mean, Rey stabbed Ben. I just kind of liked the thought behind this. It's like, you know, it's a complexity. I was like, oh, this is interesting, you know. And then to add on top of that, I also thought, because, you know, at this point, Kylo is still evil. And when Rey force heals him, that's when he's good all of a sudden. I mean, not to skip over the Han cameo, but after that is when he, like, all of a sudden is... So you wonder, by Rey giving him a little bit of her force energy, did that in some way, just a little bit, push him back?
Over this. Yeah.
And it's just like, that to me was one of those, like, I like that it's not answered, but it leaves it up to, you can kind of decide for yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and bigger question is, does Leia put herself into Ben Solo to keep him alive?
Right.
Up until the very end of the battle there. So when she's actually kissing Ben Solo, is she actually kissing Leia?
Ooh, gross.
Yeah.
yeah. I mean, that was another question I had, though, because because she doesn't become a force, or she doesn't fade into the force until
he does.
So you wonder, like, is her energy connected? Yeah, as well as Rey, you know, it's like, and there's a lot of interesting questions there that are posed that, you know, don't need to be answered, but they're interesting.
I just have to say, as far as like this last half of the movie, or this last quarter of the movie that we've been very critical about, some of the visuals I still really love. I love the visual of both of them finally wielding Luke and Leia's lightsaber. They are a dyad in the Force. It takes both of them to go up against the Emperor. Yeah. I love seeing them there, like the two Jedi, like taking on the Sith. And then that twist where he's actually using both of their powers to heal and come back, which made me wonder, like, had he been on this teetering of life, like, does the fact that he absorbs them and he comes back almost fully, does that allow her to kill him finally? You know, like, if he was teetering on this life, like, did he actually pulling the life force make it so that when she does kill him, it's more final?
I also wondered, because, you know, from what they're establishing in this film is that, you know, by giving a little bit of your force, it's kind of draining you in a way.
Yeah.
So did that make her weaker as a Jedi the same way Ben, you know, because when he gives his little bit back to her, he dies. It's like, well, and also it's one of those things, that another thing that you can see they didn't think it through is that in The Last Jedi, Snoke says that he's the one who created the connection between Rey and Kylo. But then all of a sudden Palpatine is surprised by this dyad and going like, you know, the power that fuels you will repower me. It's like, well, didn't you already know that? You know,
I just feel like the Sith just lie. So like Snoke lies about that because clearly they still have a connection after he's gone. And then there's this aspect where Kylo lies to her about like, oh, your parents were nothing, you know?
But is that also another middle finger to The Last Jedi, though? You know, because clearly a Palpatine is not, you know, nobody.
Okay, so which brings up probably the biggest questions that remain, okay? Because after walking away from this movie, the biggest question I had was like, wait, he had a kid?
And now
is his son force sensitive? Or did he, like... Because everybody else that we've seen has passed on biologically to their kin some type of midichlorian. Or is this some kind of like illegitimate kid that has no like midichlorians from him, but yet the Emperor like force impregnated his wife? Like, I mean, I've got like follow up questions about this.
My question about that, too, because when, okay, so I don't know if we're going to be talking about this tonight, but we're going to talk about the Mandalorian for a quick second.
that's the next podcast.
Yeah, next podcast. So when the Mandalorian bumped up their episode, the one that came out the week of this movie, they bumped up the episode to Wednesday because they said that there's parts of this movie that you need to see to then go see Rise of Skywalker. They moved it from a Friday to a Wednesday because of plot content, right? Mm-hmm. And the only connection that I could glean was the Force heal.
Yeah,
right.
Right, so Yoda is able to do that, the baby Yoda. Or
the child, yeah.
The child, the asset. You know, does Force healing.
Show me the asset.
Right. Wait, did they even have in that episode? Maybe I'm off.
No, you're right. I mean, the episode was the Force healing. Like, he Force heals Grief Karga.
Right, that's right.
You know, you remember Billy Dee Williams.
Yep. So
who was in this movie?
He was.
So are we going to find out that the child plays a role in the eventual? No, because the timeline doesn't add up.
Yeah, because it's like 20 or 25 years before.
Unless. Nope. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, but don't forget, there's a huge concern and need from the Empire to get the child. Are they trying to do some type of crazy, like, you know, test tube baby scenario in which they're combining to create Rey? I mean, I don't know. I don't know. But I can't think of any other reason. Like, why else would they bump the episode up?
It has to just be the Force healing. And then yeah, the my other healing, thought yeah. was...
But they why? Wanted,
they also didn't want to conflict with the fact that the Mandalorian was coming. Because apparently we can't watch TV shows and movies in the same day. So... I don't know.
That's true. It's true.
It's true. We just can't do both. So
yeah,
can't have a nice thing.
This was one of those nitpick things that I felt was I had no problem with Force healing because Force healing has been around the EU for a while. No problem.
Yeah,
I did, for movie convenience wise. I kind of felt it was weird the whole death scene though in the end because one, how all of a sudden you know Rey out of nowhere because she's Rey. Knows how to do Force Heal. No one's ever talked about it. No one's ever, how does she know how to do it? You don't know. But
she has the books, dude.
Yeah, which no one else has done before. But anyway.
Okay.
They didn't explain that. They could have talked about it like, hey, like.
That's my point, though. What if there's a connection to the child in the Mandalorian and Rey's abilities?
I'm just saying that the child is like, what's like. Learning how to talk, so it's just like.
But they made it a point to say that there's plot. There's a plot line in the Mandalorian that you need to watch before seeing Rise of Skywalker.
It's just got to be the
I get that, but like, who cares if it's in both places, right? Did they mean for it to say that the fact that Baby Yoda can Force heal and the fact that all of a sudden Rey can Force heal? Is there a connection between the two?
No, it was just the fact that you could see this Force ability before. That's all it was.
But that's stupid. That's no reason to bump up an episode.
Well, it was on Christmas or whatever, and then they didn't want it released on the same day.
Wow. Yeah.
That's what I said. But, okay. Now, Ben saving her, bringing her back to life, that was one of those weird moments where I was like, well, Force healing is one thing, but actually bringing her back from death, that was a bit weird to me. Because, like, if she was dead or what, I mean, like, why didn't she fade into the Force, but yet he fades into the Force? And it's like, wait a minute, what's going on here? It's just one of those kind of weird convenience things.
Or the child Force heals the Emperor back to life.
That would have been cool.
There it is. There it is.
Yeah, the child. Uh-huh.
The child is responsible for the resurrection of the Emperor.
He's just chilling at the bottom of the Death Star, waiting for him to fall down there. Like, I got you. I got you, dude. He's wearing his Mandalorian helmet armor down there. Like, so.
We definitely want to get to the Mandalorian tonight point.
I still got another half hour.
What?
Dude,
you want this to be like a Ramblecast show?
Because we need to talk about this movie because this is our only opportunity to talk about this.
Okay, let's hear out your you only got so much time to wrap this up, so you better
quit interrupting me, people.
Okay, place your turbo laser on the bottom of Star Destroyer and get it over with.
Send your hate mail to ownandbrewsbarbecue@gmail.com.
No, it's theforceiswelldone@gmail.com.
Oh, yeah, whatever. So now I just feel like I don't want to do it. All right, fine. The first nitpick I really kind of had was the whole light speed jumping thing. I kind of didn't like that. What did you guys think? Like in the very beginning, because I kind of was like, wait a minute, you know, I thought you're supposed to have precise, you know, computer from the, you know, the Nava computer to do this. And like, they made it look like no big deal. Like I can just jump into all these different worlds. Like it's like Battlestar Galactica. Like I can just jump wherever I want. And then also on top of that, in The Last Jedi, you know, this whole light speed tracking thing was a new phenomenon that only the lead Star Destroyer could do. and yet now TIE fighters can do it. I felt like, what? This is just way too much too soon.
Stolen from the books. So there's there's a lot of that in Thrawn, the Thrawn series. They touch on the light jumps. It's actually very cool. They call them micro jumps in the books, I think they call them.
Okay. That's cool. But with the whole light speed tracking thing, this kind of changes any future movie from now on. Like, as in, if this is going to be canon where anything can just track you, jump through light speed, then you can no longer just say, let's get the hell out of here, jump in light speed, and we're gone. Like, now everyone can.
They'll have some other kind of widget that you can put on your your nav computer to block, and, you know.
So also in the books, they figure out a way to stop that from happening.
Okay.
There's a you know, thing on the center switch. Hit the center switch, you know. So,
okay. Because, like, really, when you guys think, I know we've been rambling for an hour and a half now, but, like, we haven't even gotten into a lot of things happening. What you're saying? There's a lot of stuff, like Finn's confession, for example.
Okay. You
know, when they're in the sand, he's force sensitive. But I'm saying, but a lot of people thought he was going to say, "I love you," but that was the biggest eye roll of the film. That all of a sudden, Finn's freaking light force sensitive. You know.
I don't know. It works for me. I didn't have a problem with it. And it made sense because at some point he senses when she dies and
he knows where to target for the transmitter. How about the fact that he runs into his First Order, you know, brethren?
Yeah. That
was kind of cool.
You had other people, and I actually thought that they might be force sensitive because they had the wherewithal to be like, no, we're putting the guns down. Maybe they're just peaceniks.
Well, this was one of those weird things to me, too, because, like, I take things literally. But, you know, you see it in The Force Awakens with Hux, you know, saying that, you know, Finn, you know, that they've been trained since birth, that my troops are extremely loyal. But then all of a sudden you see, like, all these people saying, no, we were taken. We were kidnapped when we were children. And, you know, and then, yeah, all of them are force sensitive, apparently.
See, but I always thought with The Force Awakens, that moment when he's in battle and he has the hand across his stormtrooper mask that marks him, honestly, the first time I watched that movie, I always thought, oh, he's awakening with the Force. I actually thought that he was coming to his wherewithal within the Force in that moment. And then I was like, oh, apparently he's not the force sensitive one, because we were led to believe that he was going to be a Jedi with all the marketing. You know, it was like a little, well, it's going to be Finn, but then surprise, it's actually Rey. You know, that was the big reveal in that movie. So, but anyway, that was just me. Like, when I first watched it, I thought, oh, this is him awakening with the Force. So it worked for me.
Yeah. Well, since Chris brought up his brethren, you know, like the girl,
Janna.
It was one of the weirdest lines delivered in the film, which was Lando's last line of like, well, let's find that out.
Yeah, dude. What? Yeah. Like, why bring him out to be a perv again?
Yeah.
Like,
well, that's the thing is that it's a potential spinoff because that's his daughter.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because she was taken from him while Luke and him were looking for like all these things in the Sith homeworld. She was taken from him while she was two. But that's what I mean. Like, it's one of those things that just comes off as creepy if you don't know that. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. But you're just like, but he's literally going, let's find that out, baby. You know, it's just kind of like, okay.
I didn't take it as being creepy.
I thought it was creepy.
But I understood what he was referring to and the fact that they were going to find out that they were related. But again, a lot too little, too late, I felt like, in that moment. So.
Okay. All right, now let's get to I just feel like I'm going down a checklist. You guys are like, come on, Nick, just bring it up. Like, Chris, you're muted again.
I'm with it. Let's go.
All right, cool. All right, so the video game plot cringe scenes. Yes, Chris, you're already there with me. All right, so the
what?
All of a sudden, she can pull
the
freaking
transport
whose hyperdrive is activated. Yeah, okay.
Okay, well, first one, though, before we get to that, let's just get to this whole thing. So the first one is they go into the sand pit. That's fine. Cool. It's a little neat thing. They conveniently find the dagger. Why's it got to be a dagger? Why couldn't it be anything? It's a dagger. There's no.
Why does he drive a Mercedes?
Yeah, why exactly? With a little hood ornament on it? Doesn't make sense. Okay. But then we see a serpent. Oh my God, it's a serpent that is like straight out of video games. Like, okay, I can heal it. And then it just opens up the pathway for us to leave. It's like, that's how bad it is.
It was like the scene in Goonies where when the dynamite starts going off and all of a sudden out of nowhere, a hole pops open in the corner of the cave to which what's his name? Sloth goes and holds up all the rocks so they can get out.
Yep. That's exactly what it was.
Kathleen Kennedy. Thank you. Yep.
Okay, so then we get to Ray just going, I've got something to do. I'm going to go stand
out. It's all J.J. Abrams.
Oh, J.J., yeah. Yeah. Now, even though it's a cool scene, the TIE fighter coming down, it kind of makes no sense. And he later explains, I had to show this you what you could do. And like, how did you know? You know, but it's a cool scene. I won't knock it too much. But then, exactly, now I get back to, you know, Chewbacca's capture. And the force pull of the transport, the CGI is so bad, it is just, it's like straight out of a video game. Not only is it straight out of a video game, it's straight out of Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's what's her name, being captured by the Nazis into the truck. It blows up, and then Harrison Ford freaks out because he thinks he killed her. And you're like, oh my God! It's that. That's what it is.
I'm sorry. I just had I just thought of something and I just Googled it and I'm not the first person to think this. I just kind of came off that the whole Goonies trip there for a second. There's another Goonies reference in this movie.
Yeah. Did you not realize that with the dagger?
The dagger.
The dagger. Yeah. It's the best. The first thing when I saw, I was like,
Oh my God,
they're doing Goonies now. The thing is with Goonies, at least it made sense because they have a map and they know they have to be near the restaurant and then they can line up the coin, the bloom with the landscape. Someone apparently who wasn't Palpatine makes a dagger of a destroyed Death Star looking for a Sith holocron where there's only one Sith in the entire world, which is Palpatine, to bring this up. And then on a Death Star being on a freaking planet, she happens to be standing in the right location where this lines up. That's how corny that is.
Yes.
Can you guys see my screen?
No.
Here, we'll add it.
Yeah. See? That's what that is! And then after all of that, after having two MacGuffins, the dagger and the Sith Wayfinder, it's just like, oh, we'll use the one that's in Kylo's ship.
Yeah. What the hell? Oh, I burned it. Oh, here it is.
Oh, yeah, it's there. It's cool. All right.
Okay, what else you got? Because I mean, I thought we were going to get two podcasts in tonight. You're already like pushing the boundaries of space and time here. I feel like I need a wayfinder to find my way apparently, through your notes here.
So apparently they just gave Poe Han's backstory because it just made sense. Yep. Like, he's a spice runner. Okay. And then the whole love story, well, that was just weird. Like, I want to blow your head off, and now I want you to run away with me. And
I love Story.
It was so bad.
I think she's a cool character, but it was unnecessary.
It was unnecessary. It was completely unnecessary. And then at the end, with him like trying to get lucky, like, what's up, baby? Let's go.
I'm pretty sure they put it in there so that he could have like a happy moment during the final battle.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, so the half measure here is the fact that they should have gone the full Finn and Poe.
Yeah,
like they should just have. Yeah. Just there was a bromance brewing there. I think we're progressive enough. Yeah. Just do it. Just
you even see that at the end there, like Finn's just like hanging out by himself. Everybody else is all party and stuff, and he's just like that sad guy just hanging out by himself.
No, I think Finn and Poe should have ended up together. Like, just do it. Like,
yeah,
like not? full, you know, not the background kiss that gets, you know, like cut out because Disney can't just stand up for themselves and say, well, you just don't get the movie.
There was an LGBTQ.
Right. But it's kind of like loose change. They should have gone the full dollar and just said, okay, Finn, Poe, you guys are together at the end. So anyway, I mean, the romance was there. I just feel like they should have gone the full distance. So
I feel like I've got J hair a la 2006.
Nah, you do. You totally do. All right. I'm trying to get these as quick as I can, Matt. Okay, so now I have a little column here called Erasing the Last Jedi, and there's some of the things I noticed that they just changed on purpose just to do them. So Luke's Force Ghost. Rey throws the lightsaber into the fire to get rid of it. Luke catches it and immediately says, a Jedi's weapon deserves more respect. And I felt this was like a really slight at the fact that in the other
It was like a double finger.
Yeah, because he just threw it over his shoulder. Like, I don't care about this thing. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, like after clearly disrespecting it, now you have to respect it.
I get what you're saying. And I understand all of the fans and I've read the articles that point out all of these things. However, I don't take it as such. Mm-hmm. I never took that as a complete like F you to the Last Jedi. This is Luke's story arc as far as like the fact that at the very beginning, he has completely rejected everything.
Yeah.
And at the end, he accepts it. At the end of The Last Jedi, he accepts it. And that is his redemption moment to say like, no, you're not going to do exactly what I did. And okay. And then so I get it. I get the fans and what they want to read into it. And maybe that is there. But as just a casual like watching it, I don't get that. I don't get the FU to it. I understand. I get it. I read it, but I've read all of the different like articles, which after a while I just have to block because they get a little annoying because of like, yes, I know that Easter egg. I know what this is. I know what that it's like. We get it. So I get advertised a lot of them on my Facebook feed.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, it gets a little redundant to me after a while. Cause I'm no, I know you have more and go keep going. Like,
so little things I noticed, like the X-Wing, for example, like in The Last Jedi, you clearly see that Luke's door is a piece of the X-Wing's wing for his door. In Last Jedi. But in this one, he just lifts the entire X-Wing up out of the water, completely complete, and it works somehow after being under the water for so many years. That's a little bitty nitpick, but it's just one of those things like, okay. Now, this was one that I wrote down. I thought was Luke's sacrifice really for nothing? That's the one of the things that got me while watching this, because you see it in The Last Jedi, you hear Poe say, you know, this battle at Crait will be the spark that ignites the fire against the First Order. However, in Rise of Skywalker, Poe says, after Crait, we sent out a call for help and no one came. So what happened to the broom boy, which Chris mentioned earlier? I guess no one cared because they needed Lando and Chewie to rise everyone up, but apparently the death of Luke inspired nothing. And that was one of those just little things. I was like, okay, that's a weird line to throw in there to say nothing happened. I don't know. It's just one of those things I pinpointed out. Let's see here. Okay, never mind. We already talked about that one. Okay, and the last one was the holdover maneuver. So it was one of those controversial things in The Last Jedi, even though it was a cool scene when you see Laura Dern's character fly her ship through, you know, Snoke's commander, you know, but they make a point of saying that was a one in a million move because, I mean, a lot of people thought that was kind of silly and that, like, oh, if you can just fly ships through other ships, why haven't you been doing that forever?
But then we also see that it may have also been performed within the movie itself. So above the skies of the original forest moon of Endor, one of the ships that has exploded, that Wicket is like, hey, son, look at that. You know, and we see up in the sky. It looks as though that ship has been broken apart by the same Haldo maneuver. So upon further watch, check that out. That ship doesn't come crashing down, but it's kind of broken apart in the sky in a similar. So
we'll do
just
good tidbit there. Okay. We already talked about this a little bit. I want to bring it up though. Again, though, like I thought Han's memory, you know, cameo was really neat in the fact that it's because it is a memory. I mean, they make a point of that it actually is almost beat for beat, line for line, the same as it was in The Force Awakens, but with different lines from Kylo Ren. I thought that was just really neat. You know, it's like, you know, I know what I need to do, but I'm not sure if I have the strength to, you know, to do it. And then, you know, it's like, you know, and instead of stabbing him, you know, he just throws away the lightsaber. I was like, that's kind of almost like a regret. Like, I should have done this the first time. I just thought that was really a brilliant thing.
No, it's powerful. And the one other aspect of it that I love is that Han uses his famous I know line.
Yeah, right.
In relationship to his son basically saying, I love you, which he doesn't.
They did that really nicely, I have to say. I actually enjoyed it. Now, you know, comment to that family for a second. They did a really good job with Leia
and the, you know, the recycled content, really. Like all of those shots, with the exception of the flashback, were all just reused footage. But yeah. I think they did a really respectable, and it wasn't force fed. Maybe a little bit here and there, but wasn't too force fed. Which I thought was pretty good. They could have really effed that up pretty good, but I don't think they did. I think they actually handled it very nicely.
Something we kind of just very briefly talked about was after this scene, you know, when you have Poe going, you know, I can't do it alone, and then you have Lando's second cameo, or you know, bang, like, you know, neither did we, you know, it's the exact same thing as Luke saying, you know, after Yoda dies, saying, like, what do I do now? And then Obi-Wan showing up saying, you know, what he does. And then it switches over to Rey and Luke, which continues that same kind of conversation with Obi-Wan and Luke, and that Obi-Wan expressed, you know, I thought I could train Anakin as well as Yoda. He's expressing his regrets as his failures as a Jedi master, the same way Luke is now saying, I was wrong, I have regrets. But I also felt this was a really missed opportunity, because I wanted more from Luke. I mean, it shouldn't, you know, it's no different than Obi-Wan, but like, I felt that here you could have had a few lines about the importance of how a balance in the Force, you know, or his mistakes he made, or the duties of a Jedi. Because, you know, to our experience, or at least my experience from looking at Rey, she still is a rookie. You know, she doesn't know a lot other than reading the books that she's found.
But she's also been trained by two Jedi now, by both Luke and Leia, because she refers to Leia as her master.
That's true.
And again, this is the point that I've made on other podcasts, is that the one missed opportunity, if Disney wants synergy with their Lucasfilm, give us Rey and Leia doing Force stuff together.
Like, yeah.
Tons of comics, tons of books that you could have actually focused on that. That is one of the things with Resistance Reborn that I felt is lacking, is just give me more Leia and Rey doing stuff together. You know,
I mean, I'd be all on board for that, but that's one of those moments where Luke kind of did touch on in that flashback, that you never felt, at least I didn't feel, that Leia ever really fully embraced the Jedi lifestyle. Like, she was completely trained by Luke, but she kind of, you know, so was she the most qualified? I mean, she probably was the most qualified. She's the only living person to train her at that point, but
I mean,
could answer those things, though.
Right. One of the things that we were going to get more of with Carrie Fisher in this movie was her being a Jedi. Mm-hmm. So that is one of the things that we missed out on, is seeing Leia as a Jedi master. And I think that would have been really cool, amongst all of the other things that we've also talked about could have happened with this movie.
This is one of those where saying, like, where I felt it was a missed opportunity. Like, we needed some establishment with Anakin here. Like, something to bring it full circle, to make this trilogy fit with the other six. And I think it would have been welcome to have a Force, and not just Force Ghost Luke, but have a Force Ghost Anakin at least here, to be like, I brought balance, now you need to bring balance. Or at least explain, you know, them from the netherworld saying, like, this is what the Force is about, and this is why Palpatine needs to be defeated. This is why Kylo maybe have been a lost cause, or like what happened.
There was so much opportunity to do that too, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, how many cut scenes do we have a close up on the goddamn Vader helmet? Like,
yeah, exactly.
You could have just easily. You wouldn't have to have a Force ghost. You just need to have him hear the voice.
Yeah.
You could have had Hayden Christensen come in and do an ADR voice, you know, projection ghost or whatever the hell you want to call it, talking to Kylo, right? Complimenting essentially what his dad, and I'm saying, or setting him up for what his dad says. Like, you could have done that easily. I don't want to hate on this movie. I don't want to hate on it.
I'm sorry if I'm bringing it down.
You're not. It's justified. Like,
there are a lot of things that I like about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's probably more one to two as far as like the two that hate it more than myself. And I would say that as I mentioned earlier, a lot of the people that are casual Star Wars watchers enjoyed this movie. There were people that I was shocked by like, oh, they loved it, you know, as opposed to other fans that I know that didn't or reacted a certain way. So I think this is a mixed bag. And even with the internet, there is a mixed people of that loved it and other people that felt completely robbed by it. So,
yeah.
Okay. I mean, I'm getting through these. I'm just about done. So one of the things I felt was really forced that I didn't like, I mean, it works, but it kind of felt weird to me too, was the whole Palpatine needed to be sacrificed thing. Because we've always known the rule of two, you know, that you have a master, you have an apprentice, and the apprentice craves the power of the master, and eventually they do kill them, but that's just so they can become the master. But the way that Palpatine was saying it was that all the Sith live in him, and by killing him, all of them will then reside within Rey or Ben or whichever one he wanted at the time. This kind of felt odd to me because it's like, well, if that's true and he killed Plagueis, then why couldn't he, you know, create life? Why couldn't he repair himself? Why couldn't he do so many things? And so to me, it was just one of those plot holes where I was like, I'm not sure if I like that. Okay. Okay. Let's get to the voices, which I thought was neat. Mm-hmm. I would have liked it more had it been more like, well, all the Sith live in me. Well, guess what? All the Force ghosts show up. You know, that would have been cool. But instead, we get a thing of, you know, be with me, you know, and then all of the Jedi that we've known in movies speak to her, and even some from the cartoons. And probably the most controversial one was Ahsoka. Actually, that's not the most controversial one, but like, you know, because Ahsoka actually spoke to her too. So like, mm-hmm. Some people were upset. There's like, oh, so Ahsoka's dead? You know, because we haven't seen this on screen
so
death yet.
Officially, Filoni has said don't, or he did something. He did a drawing that he released, and it had an image of Gandalf talking to Ahsoka. And I think Gandalf says to Ahsoka, a lot of people thought I was dead too. And it was basically, that was like his little nod to the fans. Like, look, Ahsoka's not dead. So take of it what you will in that moment. I understand, you know, like maybe seeing some of these Jedi as Force ghosts. I'm okay with the fact that we just got the voices coming to her and not like actual, like Force ghosts in that moment. But that's.
Well, I mean, the one clear line that you can hear is Anakin saying, bring balance to the Force as I did. Mm-hmm. And that was one of those where I felt, you know, we needed more than just that, because it's like, we still have not gotten an explanation of like, did he bring balance or did he not bring balance? And, you know, I can understand if this was like hundreds of years later where like you've had another thing, but this is only 30 years later. So you just had a temporary fix on it, Anakin. That's not really a chosen one kind of thing. Okay, so let's skip to the end. So I like the return to Tatooine. I thought that was a nice little homage kind of thing. Although that was another thing I felt was weird and a missed opportunity of Luke, you know, at some point in Last Jedi or in this one, you know, he could have explained his mistakes. You know, like he could have easily just said, because, you know, she doesn't know where Luke's from Tatooine or where his house was. So, like, how did she find it?
We also know some time has taken place, because as she gets out of Red 5, she is completely bloodied, you know, and you know, kind of she has the marks of a battle, basically. As she shows up on Tatooine, she is completely healed.
She's had time to craft her new lightsaber as well.
Out of her staff, which is neat.
Yeah. How can you not be happy that we end the movie
basically at the barbecue?
No, I was happy. Yeah. I mean, I liked even like the little things they did, like her sliding down the sand in the sled, mm-hmm. which is, you know, a thing to the first film. I thought that was neat.
And seeing Luke and Leia together.
Yeah, and then I mean, some people were even upset that she said, you know, what's your last name? And she says Skywalker. I thought that was fine, because like she probably thought Luke and Leia as her parents, and that's perfectly fine with me. I know some people were upset. She's not even Skywalker. I was like, but who cares?
We knew Leia Organa as Organa forever, right?
Right, true.
Like, and that's not her parents. So, you know, get off of the whole adoption kick. So,
Yeah, I guess I can end it there so we can stop. But yeah, I mean, I have little things that I can just bring up on some other podcasts. But
on future podcasts, when Nick has his notes back out, we will dive back into this.
Yeah. So
maybe we can all say that the Rise of Skywalker isn't fully risen. It's just like kind of
it's
like,
half staff.
It's a half moon. Yeah. Like I said, I said that from again. It's a mixed bag. Like there's things I like about it, there's things I don't. But like I said, I think with Chris and I, and even you a little bit, we, in the first half to me was the most entertaining, the best paced. I enjoyed it. I wouldn't ever tell someone don't watch it. So
there it is.
All right. I mean, I feel like we could talk more about this, but I was going to try to keep this in. I was hoping for an hour and a half, but Nick was hoping for 2 hours.
I was hoping for two. I've only got a page and a half, Mandalorian.
Chris so it was really good for one. So anyway, for all of your Force needs, you can go to amazon.com/JayandJack. Help us out. All the proceeds go to help all the podcasters on the Jay and Jack network. You can just go to jayandjack.com, find everything there if you need to. But there's a few patrons that make this show possible. And as much as I would like to ramble on and on, we will have some other podcasts that will talk more Star Wars in the future. And I know there are also future Star Wars endeavors on the horizon that we've all kind of been excited about. Such as the rumor of a possible Rebels sequel cartoon, right? I mean, we were talking about that.
Yes.
My kids were ecstatic when
yeah. little Ahsoka and Sabine looking for Ezra.
Hey, got a newbie here. You know?
Oh, that's right. I forget. Sorry, Chris.
All right. So at this point, I'm going to thank a few patrons that make this show possible. I tried to come up with, this sequel trilogy related name for you. We have Tack from Tack O'Donna, Exegol Eckhart, Ed the Emperor Post Carrier, Mustafar Maggie, The Last Joanne with the Plan, and The Rise of the Drake. Thank you for doing what you do. You make this show possible. And just like the Haldo maneuver, this was one in a million. Thanks for joining me, guys.
May the Force be with you.
Rise.